Chris Watkins is here today. She's down the front and she's going to share some of her life's experiences in money management. Now, Chris has 5 children. She works part-time as an accountant in Sydney. So Chris has to juggle the dollars both at home and at work. We welcome you, Chris, to Women's Getaway.
Thank you very much. This is a bit of a change for me. I'm used to addressing children. You all look so big. And you all sit so still. But, look, I must digress. Before I've even started, I must tell you a story following on from the coffee incident that we were talking about before. I think you've got to beware of coffee. I think you've really got to look for the blessing in coffee. Some years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, I took my children on holiday back to see family in the UK. And I was taking them by myself because my husband was coming on a few days later. So my children at this age were, at this stage were aged between 3 and 11. And we had a flight from Sydney to Tokyo, a very long flight from Sydney to Tokyo, where I really didn't have time to even, you know, read the magazine that I've taken or take in any of the movies or anything. I spent the whole flight tending to the needs of one child or another. So we arrived in Tokyo. I was absolutely exhausted. The children were full of energy because they'd taken it in turns to sleep on the flight. So, you know, there was no hope of relief when I got to Tokyo. We then had to catch a bus into the city and check in at the hotel, and there was a long queue of people checking into the hotel, and I had to try and stop the little ones catching goldfish in the pond, in the foyer, and so on. So finally got into the hotel room, and there were two baths. We had adjoining rooms, there were 2 baths, so I threw the children into both baths and made a grab for the kettle. I put the kettle on and hunted around. Where was the coffee? I don't drink tea. Where was the coffee? This was Tokyo. You have green tea in Tokyo. You don't have coffee in hotel rooms in Tokyo. And it was a case of, oh, dear Lord, please help me to imagine that this green tea is coffee. Please help me. So while the children were involved in the bath, I sat down, put my feet up, opened my magazine, and there inside was a free sample. Coffee, you bet he does. You bet. Oh, well. Now, God also has an amazing sense of timing. I really had to laugh when Helen asked me to come and speak here. Yes, I've worked as an accountant in the past, but I haven't been employed in business for about 15 years because I've been home with the children. And we've been through various phases in our married life. When we first married, we had pitiful incomes. We were both article clerks in London, and I think our first flat was costing us about 3/4 of our joint income. So we earned very little then. Once we qualified as accountants, your pay goes up tremendously. So we then had a few very fruitful years, which was rather lovely. And then the children came along, and the income starts going down in proportion to the expenditure, as you all know, once you've got children. And then we had my husband change careers, and he had a while where he was earning extremely good money, and then that too took a downturn in line with the children becoming more expensive. So we found ourselves in a situation where we are back to having to watch our money in the same way as we did when we were first married. And it was such a timely reminder from God to say, come on, get back to basics. You've forgotten about it all over these years. Get back and do it now. So his timing is perfect and his blessing is in everything. So let's just commend this to the Lord before we start and thank him for all his blessings in this. Father God, we thank you for bringing us here today, and oh, we thank you that you are such a great and wonderful God and that you use all circumstances to bring us closer to you. We pray that as we're learning today how you wish us to search for wisdom, and we pray that as we mull things over this afternoon that you will help us to find extra wisdom in the managing of our money, and in the way we look after our households. Father, if there's something you really want us to learn, please open our ears and help us to take it in. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, well, let me stress too that I'm not here to give you inspiration about how to make your fortune. Yes, I'm an accountant, but I'm a little out of practice, a little rusty. And I'm also not interested in get-rich schemes. And you know, I don't think God is either. We've been looking in Proverbs, and we can read in Proverbs 13, verse 11, that it says, "He who gathers money little by little makes it grow." So God's not interested in wild schemes for making your fortune or investing in really risky things. He's just interested in watching your day-by-day management of the little amounts that are entrusted to you. So we'll focus on that. So I'm not here to advise on bottom-of-the-harbour schemes or whatever. You can go and see some other accountant or financial advisor to do that. But as a mother and an accountant, I have seen some very unwise handling of money in my times. I'm sure all mothers have. But I may be able to give you some pointers to just assist in avoiding pitfalls and establishing some good money practices. But the starting point must be that we can only be truly successful in the management of our money when we appreciate that we are just stewards of what God has given us. And that's the same sort of thing as saying that everything that we have here in our lifetimes has been lent to us by God. It all belongs to Him. None of it belongs to us. We own nothing. And when we see things in that light, then maybe it will make us really want to be a little bit more careful in the way we deal with things. If we know that that magazine, that's God's, you know, we will treasure it perhaps a little bit more than we do if we think it's just some throwaway thing. So we need to have the right perspective. Deuteronomy 8, verses 17 to 18 says, "You may say to yourself, 'My power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me.' But remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you the ability to produce wealth." So there's another statement which takes away from us altogether the ability to create anything. It all comes from God, and that's where we must start every single time. So we must make that our basis of our management. Well, so we may be very proud of ourselves if we've gained a standard of living which is perceived to be better than our friends or family. Perhaps we have a bigger house or a newer car, or we've been to somewhere much more exotic for our holiday than other people. But there's a saying which I rather like, which says, "Isn't it strange how hard it is to save money when your neighbours keep buying things that you can't afford?" And that's a very good pointer to dwell on, because yes, we do tend to get a bit carried away by how we appear in front of others, don't we? It matters to us how others perceive us and you know, the things that we have, our material standing. But again, going back to the stewardship aspect of things, we can see a lovely illustration that Jesus gave us in the Bible in Matthew 25, where he tells us the story of a man who went away, leaving three servants in charge of various proportions of his funds. The first one he gave 5 talents, we talk about, but we can establish money or gifts or whatever you like for that. And to the second one he gave 3, and to the third he gave 1. And then when he came back, he asked for a recalling from them of what they had done with the funds that were entrusted to them. Well, as it happened, the one who was given the 5 talents had done very well. He'd gone out and invested it and done all sorts of things, and he'd earned 5 more. He doubled that income that his master had given us. And the one who'd been given the 3 talents did the same thing. He went out and he doubled his money. But the one who was given the 1, he really didn't do anything with his. He actually went and buried it somewhere. so that it wouldn't get lost. So he wasn't exactly proactive, we would say, was he? He just took it and buried it so that it would still be there when his master came home. And who did the master commend? He commended the two who actually tried to do something active with that money that he'd given them, the ones who really looked after it and tried to make it work for them. So it's important to God to see our attitude to the management of money. And it's generally a pretty good indication of our attitude to the Christian life overall, I believe. I think it's hard to be a disciplined Christian and not take good control of your finances. And in Luke 16, verse 11, it says, "If you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches?" So if we want to grow spiritually, we need to be able to demonstrate our faithfulness in the area of our stewardship. Okay, well, let's try and think along some practical lines. Where do we start to develop good money skills? I can say as an accountant that one of the most dreaded sights is the client that walks into the office clutching a huge bulging box with bits of paper making a bid for escape all the way round. And he comes to you and he puts it on your desk and he says, "There might be a few bits missing. I've tried to find all I can. I've had a note from the ATO and I'm 4 years behind in my tax returns. Could you put it together for me by Monday?" Well, whether that particular day is Tuesday or Friday, it's an impossible task to have it done by Monday. And also, your accountant will charge you on an hourly basis. It might take the accountant 2 hours just to turn all the pieces of paper up the right way around, you know. So it's a really very unwise thing to do, to not just keep control of paper. That's the first area where you can start to head on your good management techniques. You can sort out your paperwork when you're sitting in front of the TV while you're watching something enthralling, rather than pay your accountant to do that for you. Now, I know that for some people, paperwork is such a totally abhorrent idea that they would rather an accountant did it for them. They would really rather pay. But I think for the most of us, it's something we can cope with. If we really try, we can. So first of all, keeping written and orderly records of your financial affairs, that's the first step in the right direction. What do I mean by written and orderly? Well, how many of you have more than one pile of paper in your house in more than one area of more than one room? Yeah, there's a few. I'm not commenting on this from my house. No. The Lord's teaching me as well, remember. So yes, and you say to yourself, right, I'm going to get round to sorting this out one day soon. When I've got a day off, or, you know, when the children are away to party, I'll do it then. And so the time comes. That day arrives. And what do? You find a box and you pile all the bits of paper in the box. And then the day after, you go to your accountant and you say, "Can you do something with it?" So it doesn't work, does it? We have to really control that ourselves. Now, you don't have to have a huge, well-designed office to store and file all your paper, but it's a good idea to have a specific area where you keep and process it all. Then, you know, if you're looking for a piece of paper, a document, you've only got one area of the house to look for it instead of all the piles scattered throughout. So try and just set aside one area for dealing with that. And then you've just got to have some kind of system for keeping the records in order, some filing system. That will depend on you personally and the type of financial situation you're in. If you're just someone who's employed by someone else, then you don't have to have terribly detailed records, do you? You need to keep a record of your earned income, and you need to keep a record of your expenses that you think might be reclaimable from the ATO. And you must keep your bank statements and credit card statements and all that sort of thing. So, but to keep them in some orderly manner, and just have a very small in tray. That's my big downfall. When you open the mail, and don't you get a lot of mail these days that you don't really need? but there's a special on there, and you think, oh, I'll just put that aside and I'll look at that later. And it is very much later when you actually get to read it, and it's at the bottom of a stack of paper that's about that high. So be ruthless with the mail when it comes in. Throw away stuff that you don't need. Get rid of it there and then. Keep your in tray down to a very small pile and deal with it as quickly as you can. Then we'll go on to have a think about how we actually manage our household finances. That the keeping of the records will satisfy your requirements for the tax office. I think you need to keep your records for, 5 years for tax purposes, so you can stack away previous years well out of the way. The tax office will probably never ask for them, but you never know, and it is a legal requirement that you keep them. But what about on the day-to-day things? Well, if we are really serious about wanting to keep track of our money, then the bad news is we have to start recording what we spend. Now, I don't know if any of you have tried that. I can almost guarantee that it will be a horrendous shock to you when you do. can you recall that the last cash withdrawal that you made from the bank, can you remember exactly where all the money went? I think you'd be very hard pushed. I know I couldn't. So it would be a real eye-opener, and also important for you, if you're really serious about going on and managing your finances, to try for an exercise just to keep a little notebook, write down at the top. Actually, I've got an overhead just to show you what to do. Well, all it is just recording each item of expenditure. We have a column for the date, we have a column for detail, we have ins, outs, and the balance. Now, we can all do those sums. That's not hard. We just start at the very top there with the balance of money that we have in our purse at this particular moment. And then, the next time we spend some money, we write down how much goes out and we deduct it from the balance. And then when we withdraw some cash and put it into our purse, we write down the amount that's gone in and we add it to the balance. And so you will just keep a running total of what you have in your purse. If you're really enthusiastic, I can tell you all are, if you're really enthusiastic, you can also analyse that into different types of expenditure, so that you would have a column where you would write down the amount you spent on groceries. You have a column where you write down the amount you spent on cappuccino, and so on and so forth, magazines and etc., etc. And that will help you to have an idea of how quickly the money goes through your fingers and what areas you can cut down on. Maybe the cappuccino wasn't quite so vital if I haven't made the budget this week. So that's quite a good exercise to do, even if you just do it for a month to get a rough idea of what proportions you're spending your money on. It's very, very helpful. Quite scary, but very helpful. Okay. All right, now what about cheques? Who has in their possession a cheque stub, a chequebook with cheque stubs that don't have anything written on them? That is an accountant's nightmare. It really is. Because you will then speak to a client and say, well, you know, we've got four cheques here that are presented at the bank for, you know, $200, $400, $600. What was the expenditure for? And they haven't got the vaguest idea because it was some time ago. I haven't got a clue. So do fill in the cheque stubs without fail. Every single item of expenditure, write it down on your cheque stub, the date, the pay, and the amount. This, with the pardons to Hugh, is very much a man's problem too. You might have to chase your husband to make sure that he writes in his cheque stubs. I know we have trouble with that in our family, and it's very difficult to keep track of where money's gone if it's not written. Just a couple of other things as far as keeping your records goes. If you buy white goods or equipment or whatever which comes with a warranty, have a special file to store the warranty documents in. then when the washing machine packs in, you know exactly where to find that instead of hunting through all those piles of paper around the house. And you can just ring up and say, yes, it's still under warranty, and you can quote the warranty number. It's a lovely feeling. Do it. Okay. So say now we have control over our paperwork. The next thing is to start to actually manage the finances. Well, have any of you read Charles Dickens? Any Charles Dickens? Yes, there's a marvellous passage in David Copperfield where Mr. Micawber, who's been recently confined to the debtor's prison, solemnly warns David to take warning by his fate and asks him to observe that if a man had £20 a year for his income and spent £19, 19 shillings and sixpence, he would be happy. But if he spent £20, 1 shilling, he would be miserable. So really, that's the crux of the matter, isn't it? We have to learn to make our expenses less than our income. And we'll have another quote here. If you live within your income, you'll live without worry. You'll live without a lot of other things as well, but you'll live without worry. So really, we're addressing this matter then on two fronts. First of all, we have to learn to live within our means. And secondly, as Christians, we need to learn to be content with what we have. We need to appreciate that the Lord has gifted us with the amount that he has gifted us, and that we must be content. That is his allotment to us, and we must be contented with it. And the Apostle Paul knew this so well. He said in Philippians 4, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through him who gives me strength. So you can even fill in your check stubs. God will give you the strength to do that. Okay, if we are to learn to live contentedly within a budget, the first thing we better do is to make sure that we all know how to prepare a budget. And what is a budget all about? It is not necessarily a device to make you worry about money before you spend it, as some people will tell you. Well, perhaps it is, really. It's appropriate for everybody in every circumstance, whether you're single, whether you're married, whether you're living at home with your parents, whether you're still studying, or whether you're living in your own home. The task is perhaps a little easier if you are single and not dependent in any way on anyone else, because you know exactly where all your money goes. You don't have to confer with anybody else. But if you're talking about your household affairs, you probably are going to have to talk with your husband as well. Now, you may be in the type of relationship where your husband deals with all the finances and it's just not your problem. But maybe he gives you an allowance for housekeeping or for the household finances. You can budget how you spend that money. It doesn't just have to be for the overall financial situation. You can teach your children to budget their pocket money. You can't start too young. So, but before we can plan how to spend our 19 shillings and sixpence, we need to know whether our income is actually going to be £20. So we will prepare a spreadsheet, which I hope you can see. What we have at the top here, we've split the worksheet into months, so that we have a column for each month of the year. And at the top we have spaces for different types of income. And at the bottom we have space for different types of expenses. We will fit in all the various types of income and fit in the various types of expenses, which we will talk about. We will total the income and we will total the expenses. And then we will see what happens on the bottom line. And then we may have to make adjustments as appropriate. But first of all, we need to think about the income. Now, you may be getting income from, well, Helen actually ran us through a list of from salary or wages or from a pension or from Centrelink or interest or dividends or rent or whatever, all sorts of income. And they all need to be written down on that list. I would suggest that you only include definite sources of income in there. Don't put down the birthday present money that you think your mum is going to give you, because you might be a naughty girl and she may not want to give you that money this year. So just the definite sources. And then we will total them at the bottom. It may vary from month to month, which is why we split the year up, so that we can see whether there's a balance at the end of each month. Okay, having determined your income, then you address the outgoings. Now, as Christians, the first thing that we really need to consider is our outgoing to God. We are commended without any doubt to give our first fruits to God, aren't we? That's what we read in Proverbs 3. Honour the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops, and then your barns will be filled to overflowing and your vats will brim over with new wine. Well, I won't comment on the wine bit, but it would be it's nice to know that your barns will be filled to overflowing. But how do we determine what we give to God? Well, in the Old Testament, there's a recognition that it is honouring to God to set aside for him one-tenth of all that we have. And we can see that even back as early as in Genesis, when Jacob made a vow to God to give him one-tenth of all that God gave him. And the Levitical laws talk about tithing back to God, one-tenth of everything that the land produced. Now, the New Testament doesn't talk about amounts. It doesn't talk about percentages and so on. There's much more emphasis on going over and above what you think you can afford. So it's to be a sacrificial giving back to God. And that requires you to really step out in faith. You don't give God what you think you can afford. You really need to work out to give God as much as you are able, as Paul said of the Macedonian churches in Corinthians, that he praised them for giving as much as they were able and even beyond their ability. And he commanded the Corinthian church, do what I told the Galatian churches to do. On the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with his income. And then this money was to be kept by the churches and forwarded to the Christians in Jerusalem, who were very, very poor. So it appears from that the best way to conduct our giving is to set aside a regular weekly amount to present to the Lord through our own churches. And we have to predetermine that from our income, not just give what you have left over in your purse at the end of the week. That really needs to be a dedicated sum that you set aside ahead of schedule, not the leftovers. The actual amount that you give is for you to consider prayerfully before the Lord. I can't give you figures. That's really between you and the Lord. But just remember, as it said in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 6, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. Whoever sows generously will also reap generously. So that's our first item of expense. Although we can't really call it an expense, can we? It's a giving back. Now, what other expenses do we have to bring into our schedule? We have fixed expenses. And these are things that you really have no control over in the short term. It doesn't vary from month to month. You have to make those payments. So that's like your mortgage, various insurance costs, loan repayments, lease repayments, and so on, if you have those sorts of things. So those amounts you have to account for in your schedule on your month-to-month basis. And then we go into the more variable items. I've got food here as a variable item, only in the sense that it's not whether you buy it or not. You do have to buy it, obviously, but the amount can vary from month to month. So you've got things like food and your gas and electricity, your clothing, your medical dental fees, your school fees, and if you're like me, you've got the ballet and the gym and the cricket and the hockey and the jazz and the tap and the tuba and the clarinet and the flute and the band expenses, etc., etc., etc. So there's lots of things that have to be written in there. And we list all the categories of expenditure down in there. You'll need to get out your recent bills for gas and electricity and so on and write the amounts in the column for that month. And you will need to use this record that you've been keeping of where you spend your cash to estimate all the amounts for the various different items on your budget as well. So it's helpful in that respect to keep a record. Now, once all the expenses are listed, you add them up. If they exceed £19, 19 shillings and sixpence, then you need to start doing some swift recalculating and you need to start determining where you can cut down on your expenditure. It's probably the best attitude to have to cut back on expenses rather than try to plan where you can increase income. I think it's a much better habit to learn to live within your income rather than constantly be foraging for ways to increase what you have coming in. And remember, we go back to what we said at the beginning, Proverbs 13, verse 11. He who gathers money little by little makes it grow. Within that budget, try and set aside a sum each month for saving. Even if it's only $5, $10, whatever, it's the principle of it rather than the amount. That's an important habit to establish, especially with your children. If you can persuade them to not spend all their pocket money, but to first set aside that little bit to God and then secondly set aside a little bit to save each month, those principles will stay with them and they'll stay with them through life, and that's very, very important. You can't start too early. You will also find on your budget form perhaps that you have some months where you are showing an excess of income over expenditure and some months where you have an excess of expenditure over income. And that makes me think of the story of Joseph when he knew that there were going to be the 7 fruitful years where he could put aside funds, where he could put aside his stores of grain to cover for the lean years that were coming. So when you have a month where you have excess income over expenditure, don't go and spend it. Don't go and spend it, especially if you can see that coming up on the next month, you're going to have excess expenditure over income. It's really a good idea to put that money aside so that you balance out at the end. If you are able to gradually accumulate the amounts that you set aside as a reserve, you might like to consider investing that money in something a little bit more long term, like a deposit or a savings account. It may even be a good idea to set up a direct debit from your cheque account to a savings account, again just for this little amount that you're going to set aside. But don't forget to make sure you've got enough left money to don't forget to ensure that you have enough money left to cover the immediate bills. Okay, so what happens if you have an unexpected arrival of money? Perhaps you have an inheritance, or somebody gifts you something. What should you do? Should you spend it? It's very tempting, isn't it? But really and truly, we need to set aside as much as we can, because you're never quite sure what your circumstances are going to be. Going back to my own example, for those very fruitful years we had in London without children, perhaps we could have been a little bit wiser and set aside money for those years to come. We didn't know at that time that 15 years later we would have 5 other mouths to feed. Well, teenage boys, that probably makes it the equivalent of 10 mouths to feed. We had no vision that that was going to happen at all. So we could have been preparing for that, and we didn't. So take the opportunity now and just set aside, whatever age you are, it's not too late to set aside for the future. Okay. Now, if, despite all the maths, it looks as if your expenses exceed your income, what can we do to cut back on our expenses? Now, as women, as we saw in the play, shopping is very likely to be the most fundamental thing to us, isn't it? So there are certain things that we can do. I've asked you to write down some hints there at the back, which I'll go through in a moment or two. But my first word of advice as a mother, and I'm sure all of those of you who are mothers have experienced the same, don't go shopping with your children. Never, never, never shop with your children if you can help it. Because you always end up bringing home things that you never intended to buy in the first place, and you always bring home things that are much more appealing to them on the edible front, but much less nutritious than the things that you had intended to get. And it always costs you a lot more. Don't shop with children. We have, at the back, we have the comment of, keep a written list. And I think that's a very, very good idea. Do make a shopping list before you go, and do stick to it. You don't need to buy the other things. You've written down what you need. Stick to those things. Don't buy others. I think, too, you really should work out the sums. It doesn't do you any harm to go shopping with a calculator. You might get a few funny looks from people in the supermarket, but because things are not always what they seem. You know, things are on special, and you think, oh, that'd be a good buy. But when you actually work out the quantity you get for that price, and then maybe you see a different, you know, a larger one or something, and just work out the unit price for that, you may not be getting the bargain that you think you are. And the quantities are all things like 780 grams and 430, and the maths isn't easy to do in your head, is it? So take a calculator and work it out. Make sure you get the best bargains. Do have a look at the generic brands. Do have a look at the home brand and the no frills and the yellow ones, whatever they are, all those sort of things. Because very often for basic foods, things like flour and rice and salt and tinned tomatoes and sugar and rice and pasta, they are perfectly well interchangeable with the known brands, and they can be half the price. So do look for those. For the more highly processed items, then very often it becomes more a factor of your personal taste in things. You may absolutely detest some of the home brand stuff. So, you know, just make your savings on the basics. Try to avoid buying too much in the way of convenience foods. It's much better for your children's and your family's health to cook at home, and it's much better to keep them away from the expensive crisps and chips and chocolate and so on like that. The way we work it at home is we make huge vats of stuff, casseroles or curries and that type of thing, and I freeze it in little boxes because my children are all over the place doing different things after school, so very often they eat in transit to somewhere else. So if I can grab a little box out of the freezer and throw it in the microwave and wrap it in a towel and give it to them when they're in transit, that works well, and it's much better for them than buying at McDonald's, and it's much cheaper. So do that. That's a great idea. It's worked very well for us. Also on our list at the back, we had don't shop when you're hungry. And that's a really good one, isn't it? How many times do we think, oh, I've got to have something? So you stop and you have a cappuccino, or you have, you know, just a little snack with it or something. You didn't really need it, but it's just become part of the whole shopping experience. Well, if you're really watching the pennies, that's a giveaway, isn't it? If you're really watching the cents, then that's a good place to start. Also, if you have children, I reckon packing them lunches, packing them afternoon teas, all those sort of things, save money over them buying. Even at school, even in subsidised places, it's still more expensive. Keep a cooler jar of iced water in the car in the summer. It's cheaper than buying fizzy drinks, and it's cheaper than cordial, and it's better for the children. Also at the back, now I really don't think we can do a lot about this one, but this one says don't become a grandparent. Now, I haven't got to that stage yet, so I'm not quite sure how you can avoid that one. If somebody's got any ideas, they might shed them around afterwards. We've got stock up on specials. That was another idea. Yes, that's an excellent idea. Buy, don't rent. Somebody's written down buy, don't rent. I don't know whether that meant in respect to housing. That can be a very good thing, to actually be earning your way to owning a property rather than just paying out rent, which in a sense is dead money. I guess that's what we're getting at. Or even buying rather than leasing or hire purchasing or something. I think behind that is the factor of not trying to buy when you don't have the money to buy something. When you wait until you have enough money up front to buy something. We'll talk about credit in a minute, if I've got any time left. There are other items which we could go into talk about savings, but I think those you can talk about amongst yourselves. Think about things like cars. It's a false economy to buy new cars, perhaps, and trade them in every 2 or 3 years. There's a huge loss in the value of a car over those first couple of years. You're much better to be the one that gets in there and buys the car that's had its couple of years' depreciation. And we really don't have to have a new car, do we? I don't think so. And things like recreation. I've learnt, you know, with my children, to send them to the movies costs me an absolute fortune. It really does. So we try and make an event of hiring a video and watching a family video at home. Turn the lights out, get the popcorn, and, you know, just make it an affair similar to going to the movies at a fraction of the price. So just think about those sort of areas. I have a little poem that I'd like to read along the lines of expenditure. I'm feeling very rich today, for Jesus holds my purse. I need not count its scanty store, as all the assets at my door, behind it stands a wealthy name, and vast resources I may claim, since Jesus holds my purse. My cashier never lets me want, since he controls my purse. Debits and credits always meet. I marvel at his counsel sweet concerning purchases I make or money given for his dear sake while he controls my purse. I'd face the world in great alarm if Judas held my purse. He'd call the gifts of humble love naught but a waste, treasure above, uncertain quantity and poor. My life would barren be, I'm sure, if Judas held my purse. And thus I live a carefree life, for Jesus holds my purse. Since money is a sacred thing, both joy and sorrow it may bring, according as we do his will, or find our hearts rebellious still, let Jesus hold your purse. And I don't think I can really give you any better advice on your expenditure than that, to go out with the attitude that, remember, this money belongs to God. Now, Helen, how am I doing for time? 5 more minutes, okay. All right, I'm sorry, it's warm and we're all drifting off here. I can see, I know accounting does that to people. They say accountants are very boring people, and I sympathise, I really do. I think I would just like to talk on just a couple of things where you really need to be very wise, and credit is one of those things in particular. Credit cards really can work for you. They really can. I'm not going to tell you to get rid of credit cards, because they can be a very useful tool. They can provide you with a period of interest-free usage of cash. And they can also save you on bank fees, because every time you use your EFTPOS card, you will be charged a fee by the bank if it goes over your allowance of free transactions for the month. But with a credit card, you're not charged on a transaction basis. So if you buy wisely and use your credit card wisely, they can be very useful. The one stipulation is you must pay it off every month in full. Now, I have a classic example from my own family. Now, it wasn't me. I hesitate to say this. But we have a family member who was given a credit card when she went away from home to college at the age of 18. And her parents made a point of trying to keep hold of, you know, how her expenses were going. Was she managing everything? Everything going okay? Yes, fine. Yep, I'm paying off my credit card each month. That's no problem there. And then when she went to use the credit card one day, they turned it down and said, no, I'm sorry, you know, there's no funds available. And she really couldn't understand this at all. So when the holidays came, she went home and presented the card and statement to Dad and said, well, you know, what's happened here? I've been paying this off each month and they tell me I've got no credit left. Well, Dad looks at the statement and sees where she's ticked against the amount that she's paid, and it was the minimum monthly payment due, and that was all she had been paying off each month. So hence the balance had risen up. You must pay it off in full because the interest rates on a credit card are prohibitive. They really are. It's one of the most expensive sources of finance to finance on credit. And it mounts up from the moment that you don't pay that first bill in full. So try never to put anything on your credit card that you know you can't pay for when the bill comes around. That is vital. Number one, vital. What was I going to say also on credit cards? Oh, that's right. Never, ever use your credit card to draw cash. I know it's there and I know it's easy, but you are charged interest from the very first moment that you draw cash on your credit card. They don't wait until it comes to your next statement to start charging you interest on a cash withdrawal. They charge interest from the day of the withdrawal. So it's a very expensive way to draw cash. Don't use your credit cards to draw cash. You need to be wise too about drawing out cash from ATMs. Don't use an ATM that is not one of your own bank's ATMs. They can charge you $1.50, $2 per transaction. And you don't even know that that's coming until you get your statement and you're like, what are all these bank fees? And if you're doing that on a regular basis, if it mounts up so quickly, it's better to make one withdrawal a week that is larger rather than to draw five smaller amounts and to maybe use up all your number of free transactions on those. Try and conserve those to save your bank fees. I mean, the banks will make money out of all of us, but they will make much more money out of those of us that are not careful with the way we operate them. Okay. Yes, just going back to the budget for a moment, it is an extremely useful thing to keep track of, especially if you have a change in your circumstances. If, for example, you are married and you are now expecting your first child and you are expecting to give up work, you have to cut down on your level of expenditure because your income is going to cut down. Use the budget to gradually draw back on areas of expenditure until, again, you're back to your expenses being within your income. But I think I will just close now, I think, with saying that to be concerned for your families, the very best thing that each of us can do for our families is to be right with God. That's the first thing. That's how we can help them most, is by being in the right place in front of God ourselves. But the second thing, I think, is to invest your time in your families. Don't try and spend more money on them. That's not going to help anybody. Invest your time in them and save back on the money. That's not important. That's not what your children will remember, what you bought them. It's those special occasions that you spent together and did things together. That's what they'll remember. So don't spend money unnecessarily on things that are going to be forgotten. Just be very wise and go back and remember that Jesus is in control of that purse, and make that always the case.